From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The streets of Iran appear to be calm after a few days of protests that included some violence. The protests centered on a rise in petrol prices last week that was intended to moderate the national consumption rate of 110 million liters per day, which officials estimate to be about 40% more than is required for domestic purposes. That move prompted some peaceful protests, but there were riots that became nested within those, with public property being destroyed, banks being set ablaze, and people opening fire on security forces. President Hassan Rouhani hailed the people's firm response to the recent wave of riots that they said were backed by foreign powers. Political analyst Mohammed Mirandi spoke with Press TV's Marzia Hashemi about the cause of the unrest and the response by the government.
Let's start from the decision itself. Do you think that it was a good decision that the government made?
Well, personally, I think it was both good and bad. After all, the heavy subsidies that are given for fuel are causing huge amounts of fuel to be smuggled outside of the country, even to countries in the Persian Gulf, oil-producing countries. And also, the rich are using this fuel, the gasoline, disproportionately. On weekends, they go traveling to the north to their villas. Many impoverished people don't even have cars. So this is an unfair subsidy. In Iran, fuel was at 8 cents a liter, whereas in neighboring countries, it's far higher than that. Even now that it's being increased, it's still far lower than anywhere else in the region. So the right thing is to decrease the subsidies and then to return that money to the those who are disenfranchised or who are paid lower, where richer people should be paying their share. But I think the problem was that the government didn't give people a heads up beforehand. They didn't raise the price of fuel for 4 years.
Right, so it was just done suddenly.
And then suddenly they increased the price threefold. And also the money that is supposed to return to the people, because people have bank accounts that were designated for this a long time ago during the previous administration. But the government, they could have, it would have been difficult, but they could have paid the money before or while the subsidies were being removed. They could have borrowed it somehow from the central bank and then returned the money later.
Like playing it before they make the decision to try to
before implementing.
Okay, right.
So that people would actually see the money in their accounts, and then that probably would have had an impact. So I think it wasn't done well. There wasn't a lot of explaining done before this. There wasn't a lot of debate. The leader didn't support the way it was carried out. He didn't say anything regarding that. He supported the process where the heads of the three branches of government made a decision. It is a big problem because fuel consumption in the country is rising very rapidly. At this rate, within a year, we'll be net importers, I think. Yes. And that would give the Americans leverage if they want to block Iran from importing gasoline. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And as I said, huge amounts of gasoline are being smuggled outside the country. Smugglers are being empowered. It's coming out of the pocket of ordinary people. And again, the wealthy are using the gasoline disproportionately. So it's something that had to be done, but the way it was done, I think, was not exceptionally good.
Right. So the way it was done, and since that time, after it being done, we have seen some sporadic protests. Now, the protests seem to be divided into two different parts. We see the regular people who are protesting and are showing that they're upset with the overall decision. But we have seen other things taking place, too. We have seen in some cities, though, people with guns. Actually, we know guns are illegal in the country. So it seems like other entities are now involved in these protests. The techniques that are being used, some of them sort of look familiar if we look at what's happening in Hong Kong and perhaps Iraq or Lebanon. Your take overall on these protests now?
Well, there's one issue that I think some of our Western colleagues will get upset with, but it's a fact that Persian media outlets outside of the country are playing a role. BBC Persian, VOA Persian, other media outlets, which they're numerous, that are supposedly privately owned, but they're funded either by the Saudi government or they're funded by the United States government and other European governments. And they have been trying to increase tensions. They've been trying to create division. They've been egging on the rioters. And so we've had both protesters and rioters. I think across the country there were at least tens of thousands of protesters if you put them all together. The rioters, I think, were much smaller in number, but they were very violent, especially last night. Tonight, the protests have died down significantly. The rioters have also decreased, but they've become very violent in a number of areas. There's been shooting, apparently, and we know that there are Western-backed organizations like the Mujahideen-e Khalq terrorist organization that fought for Saddam Hussein during the 8-year war, and they're a cult group that even Westerners accept that, but they still support them, and others which are egging on this violence, or they are supporting the violence. So the peaceful protesters were out there from day one. Mm-hmm. Yesterday was very peaceful during the day. There was no violence that I can think of right now that I heard about. And they had every right to protest because, again, the government didn't carry out this reform in an appropriate manner, I think. Right. And also, you know, many people are concerned about prices and inflation, and drivers, for example, taxi drivers and others, they're affected. So they were protesting, but the issue was the violent protesters. And we saw how these Persian language media outlets were enjoying it. It was a field day for them, so was the Saudi media and the Emirati media,
Right,
Arabic
it was
media.
Like 24/7 just trying to go live on different things. It was interesting because I saw a couple of videos from some of these outlets, and as a matter of fact, it was trying to show how violent everything is in Iran, but as a matter of fact, it showed security forces sometimes being attacked by these protesters and them trying not to respond. And as an American, I was just putting it in perspective. I was thinking about Ferguson or the Dakota Pipeline and how, for example, protests are dealt with there, and then how
very
it's
heavy-handed.
Very heavy-handed.
Yeah, and unfortunately, at least 2-3 police officers were killed. Police stations were attacked by the rioters, not the protesters. Again, these are two different things. And I think many of the protesters today didn't show up, partially because they didn't want to be seen as being in any way linked to the rioters. So it is sad how foreign governments try to encourage rioting. And by doing that, ironically, they discredit legitimate protests.
Well, isn't this the problem in general? And then this can be used basically against, we have people who they have the right to go out and protest. And I asked this question earlier on an earlier program that in Iran, when people go out to protest, then it is shown by certain mainstream media as if the people who are protesting are against the entire system of the Islamic Republic, whereas if they protest in other places, they're just exercising their democratic right. Now, what can be done? Because we understand this media war on Iran that has been taking place almost since the revolution, as a matter of fact. And what needs to be done? Because we do also have a young population here, and there are sometimes, of course, there's frustration. Iranians are under pressure more than they used to be because of sanctions and other things. So what is the answer here when we're continually being targeted and millions are being spent to target the Iranian nation in this misinformation campaign?
Well, of course, I mean, it's not just, I mean, it's billions, and it's also, I mean, it's economic warfare.
Sure.
You have over 100 media outlets in Persian that are funded by... You have more Persian language TV channels outside of Iran being broadcast into the country than actually exists inside the country, which I don't think exists anywhere else in the world. But I think, to a large degree, the Western narrative is being discredited. I mean, the Bolivia coup, which the Western media is silent about, or the protests in Chile, which they're silent, or the yellow... But I mean, the notion of fake news is, or the idea of fake news is directed towards the Western media, and many people don't, you know, because they don't trust the Western media, they recognize that it's fake news. So their narratives are falling apart, and I think there's also an issue of accountability. If Iran for 40 years now has been falling apart. It's been a regime, like, you know, sort of derogatory term, so they say the regime. The regime is always collapsing, it's corrupt, it's evil, it's unpopular. But ironically, this collapsing and unpopular so-called regime is a growing threat. And this is a paradox. How can it be a growing threat if it's falling apart? Yeah. So their narrative is not logical. And I think that since they've been repeating it for decades, people are beginning to recognize that there is no accountability in Western countries. These think tanks, these pundits, when they keep saying Iran is about to fall apart, and it doesn't, it, you know, I think people begin to recognize that this is like an old record player that they used to have that's stuck.
Right. Well, I want to look at, because we have other demonstrations going on in the area, we look at what's happening in Iraq and, for example, Lebanon. Do you see any connection at all between these and what's happening
here? I would say there is a connection in that there are people in Lebanon who, because of the system is corrupt in Lebanon, the people who were involved in the civil war, or the people who are, in charge of the economy, they've been ripping people off. It's a corrupt system. Mm-hmm. In Iraq, there's a great deal of corruption, even though it's exporting something like 5 million barrels of oil a day. And ordinary people, the underprivileged, they are angry. And in Iran, many people who protested peacefully, they are concerned about their everyday lives. And I think...
Is there corruption in Iran?
There is corruption. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's corruption. But it's nothing compared to Lebanon or Iraq. I mean, you have corruption in all countries across the world. And Iran is not an exceptionally corrupt country. But Iran has corruption. But in the case of Iran and Lebanon and Iraq, the problem in all three cases is that foreign powers try to manipulate it. They try to push it in a different direction. So in Lebanon, the people at the beginning, everyone was on the streets, literally, people from all backgrounds. Right. Now, I don't mean everyone in the country, but huge numbers from all sorts of religious and ethnic backgrounds and different classes. But then gradually, Western-backed forces began to manipulate it. The same was true in Iraq. It was spontaneous at first. Then again, Western countries, the Saudis, the Emiratis, tried to manipulate it. And we saw how Westerners were gloating when, for example, someone would burn the Iranian flag. They'd say the Iraqis hate the Iranians, as if, like, 500 people or 1,000 people are representative of the whole country. I was in Iraq during the Arbaeen March. There were over 3 million people in Iran just a few weeks ago, 3 million Iranians in Iraq. There was no conflict, there was no arguing, there was no antagonism.
Brotherhood.
Yeah, so, I mean, but they like to, the Western narrative is always negative towards Iran. So anything that happens in Iran is negative. Anything in this region, Iran is to blame, whatever happens in the region. But I think as time goes by, when Iran doesn't collapse again, then they'll have to move on to some other story.
Well, you just mentioned that this has been a narrative that has been repeated so often, when Iran doesn't collapse, because they're continually talking about the fall of, as you said, the regime. And now it's been more than 40 years. We know what Bolton had said, that it wasn't going to make it to the 40th anniversary. And now Iran, in a few months, will be commemorating the 41st anniversary. So if they have not been able to be successful in 41 years, why don't they change their narrative? Why don't they change the technique?
Because this is the empire. Their power in this region is being undermined by Iran, but also by other forces that are aligned with Iran, as they say, the resistance front. But it's not only in this region, it's across the world. Right now in Latin America, you see resistance to Europe and the United States on the rise. But in this region, the Americans are facing increased difficulty, and they simply cannot forgive Iran for the revolution itself. And Americans like to say that the problems with Iran began with the embassy takeover. But it really had nothing to do with the takeover. They carried out a coup in the country. They supported the Shah. They helped him create a brutal and ruthless secret police. Then they helped Saddam Hussein. They gave him chemical weapons. They've been imposing sanctions on this country for decades. They've killed hundreds of thousands of Iranians. If you look back the last 70 years, Iranians haven't killed hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands or thousands of Americans and Europeans, you know, during this period. But again, they, because of their Eurocentric arrogance, their sense of being superior, their superior culture and civilization, giving chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein. Of course, I don't know how that fits in with this superior culture, but they simply can't forgive Iran and or Iranians. So they've constantly been trying to undermine the country. And the irony is that through their invasion of Afghanistan, they've only strengthened Iran. Through the invasion of Iraq, they've only strengthened Iran and its allies. By carrying out atrocities alongside the Saudis, the most despicable regime on this planet, which shows a lot about the nature of Western regimes. If the Saudis, their allies, are so despicable, then I think that the Europeans and Americans really can't be far behind. Their war on the people of Yemen backfired. It's now bringing down the Saudi regime. They're running out of money. They're growing closer and closer towards bankruptcy, moving in that direction. So what they've done across the region, in Syria, they tried to undermine the country by supporting extremists, whether Al-Qaeda or ISIS. We know that through documents which I won't go into now. Everyone knows it by now. They've been pretending these were freedom fighters, but that has caused Western interests in Syria to become weakened as a result, and their allies in the region have been weakened as a result. So their acts in their Western actions in this region have backfired time and time again. Instead of changing their policy and behaving more reasonably and trying to find some sort of solution where we all can coexist, they simply want absolute victory. So Iran must submit, Iran must kneel, Iran must bow to the force of empire, and that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So do you see the pressure on the Iranian nation continuing, or do you see, as they say, brighter days ahead?
I think that the pressure will continue. I think there will be difficult days ahead, both in Iran and across the region. But I think that the Americans and their allies, they've isolated themselves 20 years ago. I mean, times are tough for ordinary Iranians, without a doubt. But in 2000, and before 9/11, Iran was an isolated country. The Americans had surrounded it effectively. After 9/11, the Americans invaded both to the east and to the countries to the east and west of Iran. Iran was under very great pressure and isolated. Now you see that the Iranians and their allies, their friends, they're not proxies, they're allies of Iran. They think similarly, they have a similar worldview, anti-hegemonic, anti-imperialist, dignity, you know, sovereignty. You see it's growing across the board. Now the Americans are isolated. They only have the Emirates. Bahrain is just as an occupied country by the Saudis. They have the Saudis, the Emirates, and the Israeli regime. And these regimes are facing increased difficulty. The Saudis are running out of money. They cannot continue going down this road. They have a leader who's not very sane, Mohammed bin Salman. So despite all the difficulties, I think the other side is in far greater difficulty. And just recently, the BBC, which is by no means sympathetic to Iran, the BBC website had a very long piece about Iran's position in the region. And now they admit that Iran has Iran and its allies have a dominant position across the board. So therefore, I think while there will be tough days ahead, but I think that in the long run, the Americans things are not looking good for them, and things will be looking up, hopefully, for Iranians, Iraqis, Syrians, Lebanese, Yemenis, and people in Saudi Arabia, too.
Dr. Mohammad Marandi, Professor, University of Tehran, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
The public discourse has been filled for the past few years with accusations of fake news and propaganda at a level that's perhaps unprecedented in U.S. history. This past Tuesday, Big Apple Coffee Party presented a symposium titled Propaganda, How Propaganda Manufactures Consent. It featured as panelists journalists Max Blumenthal, Margaret Kimberly, and Aaron Maté, and was moderated by RT's Lee Camp at the Community Church of New York City this past Tuesday. We bring you the opening comments from BlackAgendaReport.com's Margaret Kimberly. And we thank Joe Friendly for providing this sound.
It's funny thing, when I was trying to figure out what to talk about propaganda, it's like, well, what propaganda do I talk about? There's so much material there. And just a few examples, Ukraine Gate now is in the news. And there have been thousands of words written, many hours of programming. But do they ever tell you that the United States overthrew the elected president of Ukraine? And that when the US and other NATO nations deposed him, they put people in office, some of whom were just out and out Nazi sympathizers. You don't see any mention. You hear about Venezuela a lot. Maduro has to talk to the opposition. Well, he did. And when he did, and when he and opposition forces were on the verge of together jointly asking for an end to sanctions, the US government dropped the hammer, told the opposition not to talk to him anymore, and said Guaido is president. Syria, President Assad, gassed his own people, we're told over and over again. But now there are two whistleblowers from the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons who dissent from the official findings and publicly state they were rigged. So where to begin? There's so much. So I decided to stick with a domestic issue. And when you write and speak, it's like, well, what moves you? What moves me the most? And I had my own personal meltdown a few months ago when this phrase appeared, Moscow Mitch. in reference to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. And it all started when he opposed efforts to impose verified voting, paper ballots, and so forth. And of course, there's more propaganda telling us that the Russian government, they didn't just collude, they hacked our voting system. And thus this moniker, Moscow Mitch, was born. Now, he does not want verifiable voting, that's true, but the reasons have nothing to do with Russia. The Republican Party lives and dies by its ability to steal votes, mostly from black people. There's voter suppression through felon disenfranchisement and voter ID laws. There's also actual theft and the changing of votes with these mechanical systems. And the victims of these practices are mostly black people, but the news didn't mention this, and neither did most black people, sadly. Vote theft, or rather the cover-up of vote theft, is among the most prevalent points of propaganda in the country. And McConnell ought to be exposed, but for the right reasons. We've seen two presidential elections since 2000 where the outcome was determined by this. Bush did it in 2000, his brother disenfranchised black Floridians. Hillary Clinton, we're told, lost the Electoral College by only 78,000 votes. But there were thousands of uncounted votes in places like Detroit. And lies by the corporate media and their collusion with the Democratic Party ensures that this is going to go on. And by the way, Democrats don't say anything about this either. But I have a special kind of anger for the people who we at the Black Agenda Report call the black misleadership class. They know the deal. They know why Mitch McConnell wants to steal votes, but they don't say anything because they're captives of the Democratic Party. Some fear biting the hand that feeds them. Some are cynics. Some may be true believers. But the end result is that this injustice goes on. So Along comes 2016. A racist, failed real estate developer, and Trump is that, succeeded, only thing he succeeded at was promoting himself through the media. And he defeated Hillary Clinton, who was a terrible politician, who had her own integrity issues, and that allowed him to squeak through in the Electoral College along with a vote theft. But neither she nor the Democrats say anything about the Electoral College. She's still hanging around, she's got something to say. Has she once said anything about the Electoral College? But the cure for all this propaganda is to tell the truth. And who's going to tell it? The duopoly in this country, the political duopoly, is composed of a far-right party and a center-right party. I don't even know if the Democrats are center-right anymore. But they, speaking of collusion, they collude with the corporate media and they dole out information as our misinformation that benefits their crooked arrangement. So black people have gone from being the most savvy, most politically minded group in the country, the most left-leaning traditionally, and now live in hope that the same intelligence agencies that destroyed our liberation movement are suddenly going to save us from Trump. So we have so many lies going on here, and propaganda is nothing but systematized lying, that ramped up into high gear when the system wanted to make people who made demands go away. And that means history has to be disappeared, people have to be disappeared. And I'm glad I'm old enough to remember. A few days ago was the 50th anniversary of enormous marches in Washington and around the country against the Vietnam War. It's estimated 2 million people. There are two marches, one in October, one in November of 1969. And if I didn't remember it myself, I might not know that it happened. So we're propagandized to believe that that never happened, which means you can't do it again, which means you have to rely on the electoral system. All you can do is vote. That's all you can do is vote. And you have to vote for the Democrats, and you can't ask them anything, you can't demand anything, because then you'll get Trump. But people in the rest of the world are in movement, in Haiti, in Ecuador, in Bolivia. And many of us say, why doesn't that happen here? Because we propagandize more. So here we are with Ukraine Gate starting, and the media, and it's disgusting to watch these. I can't stomach it for very long, these Democrats fawning over some guy because he's in a uniform, but anyway. So here we have a situation where people who are triggered by Trump are unable to think for themselves and never follow the logical path of naming and shaming the people whose corruption and its resulting ineptitude put him in office. I was surprised to see after 2016 how so few people expressed any anger towards Hillary Clinton or the Democrats. And there's a couple of reasons for that. The master of propaganda was Barack Obama, and he's been proving that again with his words of late, but it's having less resonance, I believe. And we all remember Hope and Change, but if you were paying attention, you knew it was BS even then. Now he's running all over the world when he isn't giving speeches, getting paid $500,000, wagging his finger and telling us, you can't ask for anything. You can't have anything you want. So here we are, stuck with people who are on the losing side. But not only do people think the Democrats are their only political choice, but this party they cling to can't even deliver on its claim of electability. That's all we hear, electability, electability. They lost 1,000 seats while Obama was president. In Congress, in state legislatures, all they had left was a presidency, and they messed up and they lost that too. But most people won't say so. But you can tell you're being propagandized if you're told 1 month, James Comey is evil, it's his fault Trump is president. And then a few months later, Comey, hooray, he's going to save us. Jeff Sessions, when he appointed him Attorney General, people were like, oh my God, so terrible, old segregationist. Then there was some Russiagate nonsense and he could be fired. And people literally protested to protect Jeff Sessions. But that's all because of propaganda. And it's nothing but lies being told endlessly by powerful people and institutions. Thank you all very much.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.